Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Support for this podcast comes from Foster's Menswear, for the East Anglian gentleman's smart casual needs. Impress the lords, ladies and gentlemen at your next after-dinner speaking engagement simply by quoting some hilarious graffiti in a pair of our formal slacks. See our styles on screen soon as they feature in the forthcoming second series from Norwich's own Alan Partridge.
Hello friends of Monkey Tennis and welcome to episode 5. Before we get going, we just wanted to say another massive thank you. This week we hit 50,000 subscribers, 50,000 people that want to hear us four idiots dissect Partridge week by week. It blows our minds. Thank you so much if you're one of those subscribers. If not, you can head to iTunes and join the growing crowd. So thank you again and on with the episode.
Monkey Tennis. Monkey Tennis? Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey Tennis?
Not my face! I'm doing the photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey Tennis? Monkey Tennis?
Got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of the Virgin.
Monkey Tennis?
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis. You're invited to spend an hour with the Alan Partridge podcast, but we must inform you that Sue Cook has pulled out. Today we're going to be talking about To Kill a Mocking Alan. That's episode 5 of series 1 of I'm Alan Partridge. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Hello.
Nick Older.
Hello.
And Tom Stab.
What a way to have a good time.
I don't know why I don't let you say your own names, really.
Yeah. It sounds better coming from you. It adds a bit of gravitas.
Such a consummate professional.
Yep.
A couple of things about this episode. It's the only episode of I'm Alan Partridge to be rated PG. All the others were rated 12.
Good information.
So
interesting.
Expect a lower level of swears. And obviously, as we all know, this episode is dominated by the titan that is mentalist Jed Maxwell. We open, as we always do, in Radio Norwich.
Always the same.
Dave and Alan actually quite pally with each other in this intro. I wondered if it's because they've been told off after all the swearing that went on at the end of the last episode.
Good theory.
Yeah, there's got to have been some kind of a fallout, some kind of a speaking to.
Yep, they're back making radio gold rather than playing against each other.
And obviously the amazing quiz, the Clifton suspension quiz.
That genuinely works, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
The genius well, that is the Clifton Suspension Bridge, which is in Bristol.
Genuinely works if you're in Bristol, but they're in Norwich, so it's tenuous, isn't it?
He's come up with a pun, and that's all he's got.
Yep. That's he's started with a pun and worked backwards.
Yeah.
Not a huge amount going on in the Radio Norwich segment of this, I don't think, unless anyone's got anything to add.
No, it's not a great deal happens. Although I thought it's quite interesting that the prize money was $11,000.
That's yeah. more than Lynn gets paid.
Yeah, that's pretty high, isn't it?
Yeah.
Poor Lynn.
She'd be better off just winning Dave's quiz than working for Alan. So back in the Travel Tavern, he's singing along. This time it's War of the Worlds, which Michael correctly identifies, although you wouldn't know it from his accent.
Wild Woods.
As with a lot of Alan singing throughout this series, somebody thinks he's finished and attempts to speak, but he's not done. He adds a little "but still they come" at the very end, which is nice.
Do we all like War of the Worlds? I would just start off by saying, it's brilliant. So that's Deacon Blue and War of the Worlds.
You are representing every dad out there, aren't you, basically?
This is what my dad was listening to.
So you're your dad, basically.
Well, yes.
Yeah. So when you say it's brilliant, what are you referring to? Is it the book? Is it the...
No, the musical.
The musical.
The musical, which I have seen live as well.
I have also seen it. I think I saw it with you.
Did you?
And some other people.
It was I not invited to this as well?
No, that's another event you were not invited to.
I chose not to go.
The right choice.
So Alan already is a bit tetchy about Sue Cook's involvement in his planned Afternoon with Alan Partridge events at the Travel Tavern.
And is this the first mention of Sue Cook by name in the series?
I thought she'd been mentioned before, but I thought she had as well.
I'm not sure.
I can't think of one, to be fair.
I mean, I can't be bothered to go back and check, so...
Why would we?
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But yeah, just interesting when you have the writers talking about the Cook past Babtridge thing being a Sue Cook reference, but I'm not sure if she's referenced in name in the... We do talk about Sue Cook, yes.
Constantly.
Who knows?
He gets Michael to remove the word celebrity guest star before Sue Cook because I think he thinks of them being more on an equal pegging. And then, it's enter Jed, not producer Jed, who is a fine, upstanding member of the community, but Jed Maxwell, the mentalist.
He's so excited to see Alan.
So this is the first genuine person who has A, seen his show, and is B, a fan of his show.
Yes, because I think that's consistent throughout the series, that whenever he asks somebody, have you seen the show, he just gets shrugs or no's.
Do we ever know, like, roughly how many viewers Know Me, Know You actually had? Because obviously they say this figure started poorly and went down from there. I don't think they ever say, do they?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's maybe in the book.
Yeah, maybe.
But it'd be interesting to maybe see, fictionally, what the viewing figures were and what the genuine viewing figures were, which we could find out via the medium of Wikipedia.
I would imagine in 97, poor viewing figures for BBC, for a primetime BBC show, would be anything below sort of 8 or 9 million. But I doubt that Alan even got that.
I think that's high.
Okay.
8 million seems pretty, that seems pretty dominant.
Okay. Tom, as someone who works in telly, maybe you could give us some insight into...
I said, I think that's high.
Insight beginning and ended.
That's all I've got.
It's also around this point that it's revealed that Susan's engaged, which we talked a bit about last week. So her interest in Alan was obviously fake and for her own amusement / protection. Oh, okay. But it doesn't stop him sniffing her.
He probably goes in, doesn't he?
Yeah. She's got a new perfume that her fiancé got her, and then he goes for the neck rather than the wrist, obviously.
And where he goes over, kind of leaps over the desk is hilarious.
It's great.
it's around this time that he tries to get to the bottom of who the crank caller was. The real answer is revealed later in the episode, but he's looking through the list of comedy names that he's had calls from, including P, Ness Head, G String, Y Fronts, T Tosser, and B Oddy, which turns out to not be a crank call, but be Bill Oddy. That's this episode's.
Because what's rude about a body?
Five out of five.
Yeah. Side note, has anyone ever met Bill Oddy? I have.
Ooh, good question.
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
I say met him. He was sat behind me at Sufjan Stevens' gig at Royal Festival Hall. That is a genuine thing that happened. And
You're 100% sure it was him?
I am 100% sure it was him. He also left before the end. Just
shouting, I'm Bill Oddy, get out of my way.
Oddy facts.
I love Bill Oddy. I love Sufjan Stevens. I couldn't believe the two were in the same room. That doesn't seem like a thing that should have happened, but it did. We also find out that Sophie and Ben are at it. There's lots of innuendo. A bit crude on Ben's part, I thought.
So does this mean that Ben did send the Valentine's card to Sophie from a couple of episodes ago?
I mean, you've got to presume
I would think so.
Yeah. And so that prompts Alan to tell them about his memorable late night session of a different kind when he went to see ELO in 1976. I put a bit of effort into tracking down the real Jed Maxwell. Let me tell you a little bit about how that went. So he's played by the actor Ian Shorrock. It went badly.
Spoiler.
Yeah. A rudimentary amount of Googling revealed that he very recently was in the newspaper for working at a care home in Harrogate. So I obviously contacted them via the form of their website. When I tried to...
Was it a real website? Or did it have...
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It wasn't Longstanton Spice Museum. It's a genuine care home. They've got one of those little forms on their website, so you can't email them directly. And a funny thing happened. When I told them we were working on an Alan Partridge podcast, it refused to even send the query. It said, sorry, you need to send a valid query.
Really?
But then when I removed the word Partridge, it sent. So I think they've had a lot
kind of
queries.
Partridge block.
Yeah. I think they've had a lot of
how
queries.
How did you track him down?
I just Googled his name, and he there was an article about how he'd started working at this care home, and he used to be in Partridge and other things.
He is still a working actor as well, though. I just guess there's
on
not enough consistent
off,
work.
I mean, yeah. IMDb only has him in two things after he was in Partridge, but he has done some plays since. But then, so basically, I got to this point, and
Panto.
then eventually they emailed me to say that apparently he no longer works there.
And please leave us alone.
Yeah. And then at that point I realised that it wasn't that important whether I found Jed Maxwell because I had become him.
The hunter becomes the hunted. I can give you a bit more insight into Jed Maxwell or Ian Sharrock's IMDb. So he has 18 different acting roles listed on IMDb, and he's done one version of the British TV Holy Trinities. He's been in Heartbeat, The Bill and Casualty.
Right.
So
also did a bit of Emmerdale, didn't he?
Well, here we go. 148 episodes of Emmerdale.
Wow.
So I can only assume he was quite a key character
major
for a while.
Line.
I've got a picture of him from Emmerdale on my screen now in a very fetching jumper that Alan would definitely approve of.
Oh, he's a handsome chap.
We should put that on we'll put that on the socials.
Is it one of those expensive farmer's jumpers?
Yes, 200 quid that cost.
At this point, Lynn arrives with the tie and blazer badge combination sets in a box.
And I have an interesting note about this. When Lynn arrives, behind the reception desk, they say, oh, Alan, your PA's arrived. They don't refer to her as Lynn, which I thought was quite strange because they know her name. They've hung out.
They played Gin Rummy for about 20 seconds.
Maybe they've been reprimanded.
Maybe everyone's re-establishing their roles and trying to appear more professional.
Maybe Alan's told them to only refer to her as his PA.
So
as my assistant.
For a second, it looks like he's helping her with this box, but no, he's just making sure it's the right stuff. Then he hands it back to her. Then Ben offers to help her, and then Alan, not wanting to be out-chivalried, is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah, offers to take it off her for a few seconds before realising it's cutting into his fingers. By the time they hit the lift, Lynn's carrying the box again.
Order's restored. Lynn knows her place.
Around this point, I think this is where Sue Cook pulls out, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's a dramatic moment.
It's implied that she's been very rude to him. I mentioned way back at the start of this series that there was a little fact about Sue Cook and her reaction to being mentioned in this, and that is that she once wrote to Steve Coogan to apologise for pulling out of so many events.
Really?
Yeah. So she gets the joke. She's
brilliant.
In on it.
We haven't mentioned the fact that Alan insists that Lynn smells his breath.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Pretty bad.
She's still working its way through his system.
She's waylaid with the boxes, and then it's like, can you smell my breath? I mean, that's pretty bad.
But I'm not surprised that he definitely uses and abuses Lynn's role. Also, going back slightly, the line about Bilodi, what's rude about a body, tits. Sally Phillips, which is still getting giggles here. Sally Phillips improvised that tits line as well. So some great lines being improvised there.
Yeah, lovely
done.
Work.
Well done, everyone.
So at this point, the important people Alan referred to earlier arrive. It's a cameo from Graham Linehan and Arthur Matthews, who are obviously the writers of Father Ted, amongst many other things, playing two executives, I guess, from RTE.
Yep.
Yep.
I
TV
would say
producer executives.
This opens the scene that features Alan at his most racist.
Pink.
Yes. Alan racist. Absolutely unforgivable.
Is there an inference that Alan is diversifying his portfolio?
I think he's looking for new opportunities to expand brand Partridge.
He's broadening his horizons.
He's certainly reaching outside of his comfort zone, as you can tell from his dreadful talking. Dramatic pause. Dreadful misunderstanding of Irish culture in general.
Yeah, it basically goes through a long list of.
I've got that list.
Yeah, I also have that list.
Fair enough. Please read them out. Yeah, I'm going to read it to you then. It's terrible. Leprechauns, shamrocks, Guinness, Beamish, men in platform shoes being arrested for bombings, people with eyebrows on their cheeks, toothless simpletons, badly tarmac drives (brackets in this country), lots of rocks, horses running through council estates.
Quick story for you. My parents actually had their drive tarmacked by some Irish people.
And they did a great job.
And they did a really good job.
And everyone was happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a family story to this day that some Irish people tarmac the drive very well. So don't believe it.
So Alan got it wrong. That's what we're saying.
Yeah. He gets everything wrong in this.
Because he's an ignorant shit.
Yeah. In the previous episode, we were saying we're a bit sympathetic with Alan, and he's pretty much in the right the whole time. In this episode, he has reverted to Dosser and Dwad.
I'm into minor sympathy at this point. Yeah. He even imagines both of them as terrorists in his lap dance dream sequence, which is probably the worst part.
Yeah, and did you notice this is the first lap dancing scene where we see him dancing for someone that isn't Tony Hare? So again, it's all symbolising he's basically prostituting himself for the sake of TV. Yep.
And he also obviously massively misunderstands the meaning of U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday. Also, a little fact there, Arthur Matthews, who is playing one of the executives when he was much younger, was in a U2 tribute band.
Wow. So good knowledge.
Very good fact.
How do you feel about that, listeners? Pow.
So I've kind of always jumped in and stuck up for some of the music that Alan likes. Does anyone like U2? I've got to draw a line there.
No. I would watch a 40-minute festival set, and that is it.
He wouldn't even stretch to 45 minutes.
So generous.
If they played the big hits, of which I think several are very good songs, but
I just don't really care. No. And so, again, there's more good U2 stuff to come in series 2 this as well.
Yeah. Oh, Bono's house.
He's fine. Bono is fine.
Although Alan is now on full racism mode, he does make some attempts to concede, for example, ordering a British Isles breakfast rather than an English breakfast.
Good point.
The fun bit about this is that they start talking to Lynn about places that she used to visit in Ireland as a child. She gets about 10 seconds of enthusiasm in before Alan swoops with his ruby grapefruit juice.
And then ruby grapefruit juice.
and then obviously later on becomes so desperate to derail the interest there that he does gas breath over everybody. My question to you is, do you think at that point, that exact point in time, there is a more realistic chance of Lynn getting a series than Alan?
It would appear that way.
Yeah, I feel like she could have ended up as a consultant there if she played the cards right.
And Alan ruins that chance.
Yeah, he had to step in.
I'm kind of surprised that they even stuck around for the rest of the day, to be honest. They've basically just been briefed.
Yeah, I mean, they've made the trip. They've probably got a flight to catch, but not until later, so they're probably thinking, well, we might as well stick around for this and watch this car crash unfold.
They've already paid that £49 airfare that puts Alan off from visiting Ireland.
That's a good,
Jed also pops over, doesn't he, and asks for an autograph.
Yeah, but it's completely missed.
Completely
missed because they're too busy talking to Lynn.
To Jed from Alan Partridge.
What do we make of his interactions with Susan during this? The tea or coffee and your blonde bastard from the future?
That he's a terrible shit and always will be.
Yeah, that's about it.
There you go.
That's not dealt with.
But also, it's quite funny. Like Susan just. She ignores him. She's like, you're an idiot. I'm not listening to you. Say what you like. I don't care.
Because again, in the last episode, Alan, why don't you go and talk to somebody else? She's getting a bit brisk with him.
Yeah.
But in this episode, again, everyone's back to their roles in that she clearly hears him calling her a blonde bastard.
Does nothing.
Yeah. So we move on to Alan's actual event, The Afternoon with Alan Partridge, a TV show that's not on TV.
How's he recruited these people? How have they heard about it?
I would imagine he's done plugs on his show. And then been told off about it.
And maybe just...
a la Rawlings.
And maybe just some confused OAP shuffling around hotel reception who's just rushed them in.
Yeah. Couple of notes about this. I tried to count the number of people in the audience. There are between 15 and 20 people present.
Everyone is over 50.
Two of them do leave after they find out that Sue Cook's pulled out.
Yeah. I love that bit.
Yeah.
Well, that's how it's recruiting people, isn't it? People wanted to see Sue Cook. That's the big draw.
Yep.
Have you noted that it's exactly the same sofa and chair from Naomi Knowing You?
Good spot. Topics covered in this afternoon are the death penalty, pedestrianisation, IRA and Irish politics, concealed weapons and terrorism, where he basically uses the moves that that Michael taught him earlier in the day.
In the lift scene earlier.
Yep.
And move and fire.
Where you also get Susan's first proper shriek when she reprimands Michael!
which she gets very angry.
A little teaser for just how angry she's going to get at Alan in the next
episode.
She
really can go into the red vocally.
Yeah, and she switches very quickly.
I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of her.
Absolutely not. You get a slap in the face.
The other thing I liked about this was that Alan's opening line to the 15 to 20 people who assembled, it was, good evening. The event starts at 3 p.m.
Oh, and of course, the build-up to that with the keyboard going wrong.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Goes to the machine. Up. Gremlins in the system, perhaps.
Yeah. And him, the later, attempting to use his anti-terrorism practices against a woman who looks like she's in her late 60s, early 70s.
And as the producers point out, she looked genuinely scared.
Yeah, which Alan seems proud of. So he spots the producers, the executives, leaving the meeting and rushes afterwards to catch them. This is a scene that involves a lot of quick thinking on Jed Maxwell's part. Basically Alan has to pretend he doesn't live in the Travel Tavern because he's been talking it down all day. Jed obviously offers up his house. Alan introduces Jed to the executives as his driver. Jed very quickly promotes himself to business partner.
quite rightly too, I think. Yeah. Why not?
Smart when he wants to be. I think later on Alan describes himself as a Homer skeptic, which makes me feel even more sorry for Glenn Ponder.
Yes. Very true.
Well, you do get these interesting references about is Alan homophobic or how homophobic is he, but again, is it more he's just quite ignorant to things he doesn't really understand, because you have the not Adam and Steve. So is he homophobic or is he kind of weirdly obsessed? So does this maybe tie into the potential ladyboy obsession and things like that?
I just think it goes back to the point that every minority group can be offended. And probably will be.
And Alan will do that.
I think he's obviously a Daily Mail reader, so I think he just probably absorbs that stuff via osmosis from reading the paper.
In fact, I think the other week we had a tweet from somebody asking, did we think, is Alan gay?
It's a theory.
I don't think he is. I think he's just ignorant and scared and confused.
It's a theory.
Yeah. And it feels like he's absorbed stereotypes for every sort of minority group, and that he wields them out. He's got a couple of catchphrases that he uses to describe his attitudes. And then he probably doesn't have any understanding or thoughts beyond that, really.
Yeah, I doubt he knows any gay people. I can't believe he's got any farmer friends.
Apart from Ben Ponder.
They're not friends.
But that's a rather fraught relationship, isn't it? I think, yeah.
It's... Although, did he really understand that Glenn Ponder was gay anyway?
Probably not.
I'm not sure. God, I can't wait to talk about Glenn Ponder and the Nez.
and Chalet.
Not for now.
So we're at Jed's house now, which looks relatively normal from the outside.
Why is there? What's the bowl of bread for? I know it's builders.
it's builders for
friends, but why would there be a bowl of bread?
I assume that's for some kind of pet or
birds. Some kind of
are the
pet.
Birds his friends?
Obviously, Alan
speaks to the animals. Jed backs off.
Alan, David Copperfield, and a trophy are all on top of Jed's TV. Any guesses what the trophy might be for? I don't know.
I just want to go back to the bread very quickly I think in the commentary they said that was just genuinely there outside the house, and they thought they'd reference it because it was a bit odd. Okay. So there you go. No one knows why. Basically,
Lovely picture of a topless lady. That is a lovely picture.
Very classy.
My question was: she's got stars over her nipples. Do you think that's supposed? I think that's they had to put that on for it to be broadcast.
Compliance.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Jed Maxwell wouldn't have bought that and then put the stars on himself, would he?
Surely not.
He's a crazy man.
When you say there are stars on there.
Right, Nick, could explain what you're not understanding.
Yeah, they could have been drawn on, but I just think if you're going to the effort of painting a topless lady, why would you then conceal the nipples?
I hadn't noticed that.
Good point.
I know
so important.
Good deadly point.
I think we mentioned in a previous episode, but Jed's house in real life sold 4 years ago for £575,000.
Wow. Yep.
That's where is mental. It?
Can't remember.
Great. Cut that bit.
Stay tuned for more insight.
Yeah. I like the bit when Alan describes the painting as having a very haunting quality.
Adam, I think you mentioned the other week that there's a video on YouTube of people that some Partridge fans have visited Jed's house.
Yeah, they recreated the pilgrimage outside.
Did you say that that's on YouTube?
It is on YouTube, okay. Yeah.
We'll
dig that out and post it.
I think we might have said that a few weeks ago, but we'll definitely do it this week.
So after a bit of tottering around the house, we end up in Alan's shrine in the dark, as I like to call it. I also like Jed's got some strong priorities here. He's got a fake Alan, but only one mug.
He's got an aerialator, though.
An aerialator, a mug, a milk jug, and a coffee jar. That's what everyone is forced to drink out of.
Now, Tom Stab and I were discussing this off mic earlier about do people use aerolators anymore? How do you do your washing?
It's a big chat format.
I don't. No, I think they're gone.
It's just liquid tabs, isn't it?
Jed, yeah. Producer Jed is saying yes.
It's a Jed thing. Jeds unite in their very use good. Of aerolators.
So are we all liquid tabs? Are we on board with here? Oh, powder? Yeah. What would we say?
Well, liquid tabs for sure. But thinking about it, how would an aerolator even work? Because it doesn't have a lid, does it?
Well, that's the point, because then it tips upside down.
Then what's the ball
out.
For?
No, it's got... I can't believe we're talking about this.
This got, is what the people want to
it's
hear.
It's got a lid, the ball is loose, and the ball allows a slow release.
So it has got a lid.
Jed's saying yes.
Producer Jed. Our resident
that,
Jed.
I think there were, are, different kinds of aerolator, to be honest. So we can probably post some links to some aerolators as well.
Now that is hot content.
Stay tuned for this gold.
Another thing on the aerolator. Not done with it yet. When Alan goes to drink his is it coffee or tea? I can't remember.
Tea,
drink.
I think.
Goes to drink his hot drink out of the aerolator. He says to the executives, "I often think I should swallow this whole." And I thought, "Do you often think that?" This has never happened before, surely.
I'd say that this episode probably has the most in common with sitcoms like The Office, in that it's very difficult to watch. It's quite cringy, whereas I don't think there's as much of that in other episodes in this series. I feel like this is the most cringeworthy, difficult to watch, especially the exchange in the hotel with the TV execs.
Well, yeah, because he's just, in classic Alan style,
it's spiraling
he's
out of
getting
control,
it wrong.
Yeah. And it's spiraling out of control.
And also the camera work in this one feels a bit more like a deliberate documentary, almost.
Particularly when he runs away from Jed's house.
Yes. Yeah.
And actually, you can see the camera crew in the reflection of the car.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Well done, BBC.
Also, you find out that obviously Jed is the crank caller. He's the man behind Gems's penis head and Y fronts.
What happened to David Copperfield as a personality?
Well, he lost the battle for wall space.
We know that much.
He was very popular in the 90s.
Are you about to Google this?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just
Googling, checking up on your emails.
And
Jed Maxwell has also been taking photos of Alan on a telephoto lens. Well as being the crank caller. So really is Alan's biggest fan.
Also seemingly just writing the word Alan in Word documents and printing them off and putting them on the wall.
Wouldn't you?
Why not?
He's just a fan.
Your biggest fan.
Listening to the DVD commentary on this episode, Coogan and I think it's Coogan and Peter Bainham that did the commentary on this one. They talk about how the mental fan thing with Jed is actually based on something that happened to Stuart Lee. So when he was on tour back in the 90s, he stayed at a fan's house one night, and basically the room he was given to stay in was covered in Lee and Herring pictures.
That is not true.
That is true. That is based.
Wow.
That was the inspiration for the.
That's amazing.
The fanatic.
I mean, put it this way: if we turned up to a fan of Monkey Tennis's house and there were just pictures of our faces all over the wall, what would we think?
Would you be impressed?
Yeah.
If anyone wants to get in touch who's done that, please do.
I think it'd be a bit of a lapse of judgment for them to pick that as the room you have to stay in.
True.
Yeah. But actually, Alan walks into it by mistake, doesn't he?
It's a brilliant reveal that putting the light on and then you see everything. Yeah. So you already know that Jed's a bit obsessive and a bit mental, and that's impact. Bosh.
The mask that he puts on that looks like Alan, you'll know that from one of the episodes of Naomi Knowing You as well, where
the
dancer's
wearing that. Is the same mask.
So how's he got that then? Was he maybe in the audience of Naomi Knowing You and stole it from the set?
Just one of those guys. He's the sort of guy who would spend all his money on a memorabilia auction.
Although actually I think in the context of Naomi Knowing You, those masks are on general sale.
Oh, are they?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, he does mention you can buy them.
There we go. Great. Didn't need to fact check it. I've got Adam here for that, so thank
I've
you
just
for
verified
verifying.
It.
Do fact check.
He's done a memory. Something else I learned from the DVD commentary as well, that I don't know if anyone remembers this, because it was in the 90s, and I seem to be the only one that remembers things in the 90s.
Go Britpop.
The VHS box sets of the series were available as Time Blazer badge combination boxes.
I do remember that.
It wasn't a real Time Blazer, it was a T-shirt.
The rest of us were a bit too young, but you owned the VHS, didn't you? What was that like?
I've got it right here, actually. That's a lovely VHS tape there, making
noise. And
what a satisfying noises of the past.
Yeah.
Yep, well, it's got the... Interesting, it has the original transmission dates here. You've got 24th of November 97.
Do read
1st
them.
Of December 97, 8th of December 97.
And these are on display in your lounge.
I mean, they really are ornamental.
So you've still got VHS in your lounge.
Yeah, I mean, I know where to play them.
What we established here?
Jed's a mentalist.
Jed's a mentalist.
Jed is the defining moment of this. All Jeds.
Can you remember how many times did Jed faint getting his Alan tattoo?
He fainted 3 times.
Oh, yeah.
What do we think that of the tattoo?
I think it doesn't look like a real tattoo.
No.
They've done a pretty good job, but I can imagine that sweated off a bit during filming and had to be topped up. And also, you'll remember from a previous episode that Simon Pegg auditioned for the role of Jed Maxwell but didn't get it. And I think the best man won.
Yeah, he plays it brilliantly.
Yeah, that's true. I still would have liked to see Simon Pegg do it. But.
And then the episode finishes with Alan escaping from Jed's by promising to go and have that pint. Go and have that pint. Go and see his brother. And then followed by, no way, you big spastic, you're a mentalist, which is, again, another classic Alan line. And then he
Where's the road?
Jumps over the fence.
Out of the car, jumps over the fence, stumbles a bit, runs through the field. And as we were saying a moment ago about the camera work becomes quite different at this point, I think that's the only specific camera shot on the entire series where Alan is followed. So everything else is quite static camera shots. So that does bring the kind of fly on the wall feel.
That's kind of links back to why this episode felt a little bit more in tune with something like The Office or Curb or something like that. It's slightly different. The way that it's shot is slightly different.
Yeah, it's only a small change, but it just changes the tone of that, the ending of the episode quite a lot. And then, as we said, the camera crew clearly visible in the car. And I think I think in the book, he goes into more detail about what happens after. Doesn't he send Lynn to come and collect his car and collect him and something like that?
Oh, yeah, he does. He goes into a lot more detail.
Yeah. Oh, we should have researched
We should have researched that.
Well, maybe we can talk about the book another time.
Yeah.
Because his retelling of the fight in the book is hilarious because it's incredibly detailed and largely false, if I remember correctly.
Lovely. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 5, season 1 of I'm Alan Partridge, To Kill a Mocking Alan. I am going to test these guys on the Celebrity Mastermind and Mastermind rounds of Alan Partridge in a second, and we'll do Cards Against Alanity as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So avid Partridge fans will know that Alan has come up as a special subject on several editions of Mastermind and Celebrity Mastermind. So what I'm going to do is put Tom and Nick through their paces. I'm going to ask the exact same questions that were asked on Celebrity Mastermind and then Mastermind about Alan. Whoever thinks they know the answer first, ping the bell and we'll see if you do or you don't.
This is very exciting. So we're going to have to just fight each other to get that.
Fight you. Yeah.
As most people know, Celebrity Mastermind is a bit softball sometimes, so these questions are very easy.
Because we are experts or because we're not?
Well,
we're not experts.
We're not experts. And it does get very hard. These questions do get hard towards the end, and they're not all about I'm Alan Partridge. They're about Alan as a whole.
Okay.
So these are the questions posed to Mike Bushell. I'm shrugging. Celebrity Mastermind.
Celebrity?
I know.
Who?
Research in your own time. Question one. In the first series of I'm Alan Partridge, which budget hotel does Alan's... That was Nick.
Heaven.
Correct. 1 point to
Nick. Yeah, okay, you're right. These are quite easy.
Oh, yeah.
Jed keeping score. Producer Jed keeping
score. Okay, question two. What's the name of the radio station Alan Nick again?
Radio Norwich.
Yes, correct. I told you they're easy.
These will get harder, right?
Not for a while.
Oh. Stay tuned.
Question three. Alan takes Jill on a Valentine's date. Yes?
Owl Sanctuary.
Yes, correct. Question four. Who's the famous guest in episode one of Knowing Me, Knowing You who fails to turn up even though a special chat room has been prepared for them? Roger Moore is yes. right. Question five. Which Reading-based sales company is Alan preparing a conference for in The Colour of Alan? Ooh. Tom Stab?
Oh, he spaffed it.
Anyone else?
Oh, Dante Fires.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Dante Fires. Next question. How does Alan take advantage of the eat as much as you like breakfast provided at...
we all...
Tom Stab?
A big bloody
plate. He's got a 12-inch plate. We'll accept that. Next question. Alan is so annoyed at a word a Times critic uses to describe knowing me, knowing you that he... Yes, Tom Dark?
Moribund.
Correct.
Is this moribund?
In Watership Alan, what do a group of farmers insulted earlier by Alan throw off a bridge?
Oh!
That was Tom Stab.
People are going to get hurt.
Farmers.
Dead cow is correct.
Fat cow.
Fat cow. Which German tropical fruit drink does Alan try? Tom Dark?
Spunt.
That's correct. apparently there are two correct answers to that. You can say spunt or sprunt.
Nice refreshing.
Can we get a score update?
A score update?
3-3-3.
Wow.
How many left?
This is electrifying.
Is this the last one?
No, there's loads.
Again, stay tuned, there are loads.
In Basic Alan, what does he try to steal in an attempt to be spontaneous? Nick?
Traffic cone?
Correct. Okay, turning the page. We're coming
there
towards,
are only 10 more pages.
We're coming towards the end of the Celebrity Mastermind, aka Easy Questions. In a room with an Alan, Alan tries to get a second series of his show agreed to by the chief commissioning editor of the BBC.
Tony Hayes.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Gamble.
Lucky bugger.
Okay, the last question of Celebrity Mastermind. Which celebrity does Alan pretend to know to impress his Ukrainian... Tom Stab?
Bono
from U2. That's correct.
Bono!
Okay, scores at the end of Celebrity Mastermind. It is 4-4.
Well, now what do we do?
We move into regular Mastermind, of course.
Okay.
So, Andrew Burrows originally answered these questions.
Hello,
question one of regular Mastermind. What is the name of Alan's son, who he named after...
Fernando,
well done, Nick. Who was Alan's first ever guest on Knowing Me, Knowing You?
Ooh, that could be radio or TV.
That's all the information that Alan was given in the question.
All of a sudden, these questions have got...
Tom Stab says...
Will you accept Horsey Woman?
No, I won't.
Played by Rebecca Front.
The correct answer was Sue Lewis.
That is Horsey Woman, Sue Lewis.
Yeah. You not accept Horsey Woman?
No. That's a joke of an answer. What video company produced Crash Bang Wallop or a video?
Meteor.
Yes, Meteor Films.
Good knowledge.
I'm speechless. Yeah. I'm literally speechless.
I didn't know that.
What was the title of Alan's autobiography which detailed his battles? Yes,
Bouncing
Back is correct. Alan was a guest on which religious radio show on Talk Cambridge presented by Tessa McPherson?
No idea.
No.
The answer is Prayer Wave. I totally got that. Alan's former teacher, Frank Raphael, is the head of which school that Alan also attended?
Oh, bollocks.
Did you think it was going to be a chalk penis?
No, I was going to go sweaty.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Is it? No. Something for boys?
No, it's it's Sir William Dunwoody. Who played the disc jockey Phil Clifton, whom Alan often shared banter? Yes,
Phil
Tom
Cornwall.
Stan? Phil Cornwall is correct. To which country club was Alan denied entry after Tom Dark?
Choristers.
Choristers is correct.
Can we get a score update?
Score update so far. Nick and Tom Dark are on 6. Tom Stab is on 5.
Ooh. How many more have we got to go?
Another page and a bit.
Stay
tuned. Don't turn off now.
Yeah. No. In series 1 of I'm Alan Partridge, what was the name of the episode where Alan has a truly shambolic meeting with Tony Hayes? Yes?
Basic Alan?
No!
A room with an Alan?
Yes, a room with an Alan.
I could see that. So yeah.
At what course did Alan present horse racing in the second episode of The Day Today?
Goodwood?
No, Marple.
Oh, it was a guess, to be honest.
What is the name of Alan's production company where he wants... Yes, Tom Stab.
F3 Productions.
Correct.
What the listeners can't see, obviously, is how ferociously the bell is being hit. Yeah,
this bell is not going to survive this quiz, is it? Who was the guest on Alan's Knowing Me, Knowing You radio show who was voted Carnaby Street's Mr. Boutique of 1969?
No idea.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to
The answer's no Adam Wells. Which polytechnic did Alan attend before embarking on a career in journalism?
Yep. Greater Anglia?
East Anglia, I'm afraid. On which Radio 4 news programme did Alan Partridge get his first...
Yep. The Day Today.
No.
Oh, no.
On the Hour.
On the Hour, correct.
Yes.
Knew that.
Which veteran rock star was interviewed by Alan Partridge during a radio segment of 1999's Comic Relief?
Yep. Noel Gallagher?
No, he did interview him, but it was on TV.
Bugger.
Anyone else?
Play Along at Home, probably. Anyone?
It was Brian Ferry. Which writer of the I'm Alan Partridge series played competent interview Ray Willard on the documentary Anglian Lives?
Yep. Peter Bainham?
Correct.
Yeah. Very good.
Which old friend of Alan's replaced Tony Hares as the commissioning editor of the... Yep.
Chris Feather.
Chris Feathers, correct.
He likes me.
In the radio show Knowing Me, Knowing You, from which American city did Alan co-present a show with American model Kendall Ball? Or alternatively, if you don't know, name an American city.
Yep. New York.
No.
Boston.
No.
Los Angeles?
No. Okay, no more guesses. It was Las Vegas.
Where David Copperfield has a residency, yep. We've been told. Yep. So thanks, producer Jed, for that info.
Yep. What was the title of the I'm Alan Partridge episode where Alan planned to watch every James Bond film in order over a bank holiday weekend? This is the last question. Go on.
A View to an Alan?
Nope.
Never Say Alan Again?
Correct.
Oh,
well done.
Okay, that is the end of the mastermind, and the scores are Tom Dark is on 7,
yes.
Nick is on 8, and Tom Stab is on 8.
Ooh, tiebreaker for sure.
I have not prepared a tiebreaker, so whoever hits the bell first. Nick is the winner.
Oh, he always bloody wins.
Okay,
I would like to raise that is an unfair way of saying this.
And would like a question.
Adam's rules are final.
They are. Okay, Cards Against Alanity coming in a second. So it's time for Cards Against Alanity. Every week we take an incomplete sentence from that week's episode of I'm Alan Partridge. Everybody on the team has cards with phrases from Alan Partridge on them. They have to complete the sentence as best they can. We show all the results to producer Jed, and he will ping his bell for the one he likes best.
That's what the bell sounds like. I think everybody knows bell. That quite well by now.
So this week's sentence is, you'll have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, .. So everyone hand their cards to Jed for the best answer you have.
Can I get a recap of the sentence?
Yes, the sentence is.
It's everything to play for.
You'll have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, .. So they're all in. Jed's perusing them as we speak. Hand it back. I'm going to read them all out. So the sentence is, you'll have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, a bottle of Bolly. You'll have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, an aerialator. Just the correct one. You have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, a walnut gear knob.
Yes!
That's the winner. Tom Dark takes it this week, and the other one was, you'll have to have this milk jug, I'll have the coffee jug, and there you go, Alan, tie and blazer badge combination kit. So I'm the only one yet to score. There's one episode left.
And... Well, I mean, okay, stay tuned to find out what happens next week.
Anything can happen. Maybe we'll add 10 points next week. We'll see.
Yes.
So that wraps it up. Thanks so much for listening to Monkey Tennis this week. You can catch us on Twitter at The Partridge Pod. You can email us thepartridgepod@gmail.com, or you can get us at facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Thanks again, and we will catch you next week for the last episode of Series 1. Goodbye.
Bye.
Gotta go.
This is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. To find out more about the records they release and the podcasts they make, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey tennis? Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis?
Not my face, I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey tennis? Monkey tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of a virgin.
Monkey tennis?
Oh. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.